Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. Just a little bit of housekeeping here. Last week we had a lot of call-ins and with Robert Powell, and because of that, I got a lot of email, and I have to listen to my listeners. Basically, what it boils down to. So we're going to push the phone calls to the last half hour of the show. And I'm sorry, we're just going to, for the people that want to call in earlier, we're just going to have to leave it at that and see how that goes. As far as getting a really good question for our guests, if you want to know who our upcoming guests are, there's a couple different ways you can do that. You can subscribe on our YouTube channel and click the little bell. That'll give you notices when you're subscribing. You'll get an email that'll have that information and the stream up there. For anyone else, you can go to our website, podcastufo.com, and enter your email into our sign-up weekly guest notices and announcements. And on Monday mornings, you will have the information for our upcoming guests then for that Tuesday. And also, I do post our upcoming guests on the website. Now, I'd like to make an announcement to our wonderful repeat guest, Linda Zimmerman. She is starting her own radio show on UFOs. It's called UFO Headquarters. The first show will be on Monday, February 11th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's on the Hudson River Radio. And you can listen live to the live stream over at hudsonriverradio.com. So check that out. Linda's always been a great guest, and she, I'm sure, is going to run a wonderful show. So you may want to check that out. I do want to thank everyone that helps out with the show. It really means a lot. It's the only way we can do that. And if you'd like to become a subscriber and listen to the full shows on your podcast player, all you have to do is go to podcastufo.com, and all that information's there. And again, I thank all the people who have already done that. And I do thank every listener and great people over at YouTube and KGRA Radio and the Dark Matter Digital Network, all of you. Thank you all. And we are ready to bring in Alejandro. Did I talk about our guest? I don't think I did. Oh, my goodness. Sam Maranto. Repeat guest Sam Maranto will be on in just a bit right after Alejandro. And Alejandro, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad you made it. Boy, it was a tough one tonight.
Yeah, it gets complicated. And sometimes the services we use do not participate with us well. Yeah.
So anyway, how's everything going?
Everything is going good. So lots of stuff going on. I'm just right now writing up my review for tonight's episode of Project Blue Book. I know you've already seen it, so we won't talk about that episode today, mm-hmm. but we'll maybe save that in the future so we don't do any spoilers. But it's an exciting and interesting one, that's for sure. However, you know, just like we talked about this last week, the last Project Blue Book show was really diverging from reality. But what they did do was kind of incorporate these mythologies around UFOs. Last time the episode was about, you know, kind of the Nazis and Nazi technology type of stuff that may have been brought over here by German scientists when they were essentially brought here from Germany as part of Project Paperclip, which was the name of the show. So they do at least touch upon those things. However, yeah, it does diverge greatly from reality. And I guess I'll say, even though the title of this tonight's episode is Foo Fighters, you may agree, and I'd like to hear your opinion, they don't come any closer back to reality in this next episode. They get pretty far out there.
Yeah, I do remember that. I do remember that. But I think as the show moves on, I don't think they're all going to be out there, you know, and I hope the hardcore people don't leave, and because it is really a great show overall, you know, so I hope they come back.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's exciting. It's getting, I guess, more X-File-ish, although it's getting kind of dark. And yeah, you know, Karen had said something. She just said, I hope that, you know, people just don't blow it off as, oh, you know, I thought the show would reveal something, that there was some kind of real mystery to the UFOs, but it's actually just all make-believe, just like UFOs are, and hopefully it doesn't reflect bad on that. But I'm not so sure it is, because we are seeing certainly in the media, a lot more stories on UFOs. And Sam could speak to this. I know I saw one in the Illinois, Chicago area, but they're all writing about these, and we've talked about it before, sightings in their local areas. And we're seeing a lot of these stories. So it's definitely created an interest in the topic, I believe. I think that that, along with, of course, the New York Times article from a year or so ago, and some of those developments, are really pushing kind of this newfound interest in credible information regarding UFOs. And at least the History Channel is writing some good stories regarding all of this. In fact, they've got a great story on Foo Fighters that you can find on the History Channel website right now, and to support, you know, tonight's show. So check that out. But actually, there's a different story that I'm finding extremely interesting that I wanted to talk about today.
Great. All right.
Ready? So you probably saw this one. In fact, I think we talked about it. But it's this astronomer, Harvard astronomer, that says that the Washington Post title is, and the story is getting all over the place. Harvard's top astronomer says an alien ship may be among us, and he doesn't care what his colleagues think. And it's an interesting story. So this astronomy professor's name is Avi Loeb, and he has, I guess, this calculation that he calls cosmic modesty, or this is what he calls cosmic modesty. And what he says is that the idea that it's arrogant to assume we are alone in the universe, that's what his cosmic modesty is, or even a particularly special species. And which I think is really interesting, and I love this idea to begin with, because in nature we see that there isn't one of something. There's many, 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 many of something. In fact, when it comes to planets, we're finding out that there's tons of planets out there, perhaps even more planets than suns, which would then equal, kind of like his equation goes into, that we're not so special and unique. I think what's interesting about that is if you take that even further, then this whole level of technology that we have gotten to, or even our social economical kind of makeup, probably also isn't unique, or even a species that is beginning to become spacefaring isn't necessarily unique. So he really pushes this forward. However, he is the guy that was really pushing the idea that the reason that it's mysterious is by its movement, they're able to determine, you know, kind of the makeup of the object. In this case, the object move in a manner that they could not explain. It the way that it would, the gravity affected it, it seemed lighter than a typical rock, so it was made of a lighter material. Also, it seemed, I guess, it sped up at some point. So the idea is that perhaps the way that the sun hit it, you know, was able to propel it at that time faster than it could be. That's kind of the leading theory. But this guy's saying, no, that doesn't seem right either. So it's got to be extraterrestrial. He's suggesting, you know, it's like an extraterrestrial technology that was sent into our solar system to come take a look and then keep going. Like I said, some of his colleagues are like, well, he doesn't mean it. And that's essentially what they're saying, that someone suggested, well, he could be putting this forth as kind of an exercise, because that's often what professors do to teach, you know, how you theorize and how you prove or disprove theories. Other people are saying perhaps he's joking, or it's just kind of funny because of a lot of his, this guy is super credible. He's very well known. He's written a lot of papers. And so he's so credible, they can't really call him a nut. So they're just kind of trying to come up with excuses as to why he's doing this. But it's really interesting. It does seem, at least right now, he is very, at least, adamant that there's got to be extraterrestrial civilizations. There's got to be other species like us, more advanced than us, out there. And that's one of the reasons he loves this idea, that this could have been evidence of that. But what's great is we're seeing a lot of this. There's another story out there recently with another scientist saying that we need to take, you know, the idea that we might be being visited seriously. There is a paper written by this Columbo scientist who got in the news also, where he was essentially saying the same thing, that, okay, maybe we're not being visited right now, but if there is a potential for that, if we find something odd, we can't discount that offhand. We have to leave that in the potential possibilities out there before we just say, you know, it can't be this, because that's not scientific. Science, you have to disprove it before you can not include it definitively. So,
right. Well, hey, I really appreciate you picking up the mantle here. While I had it, the strange thing happen is my computer screen went black, and then it just was gone. I've never had that happen before. It's a late model Mac.
Weird
I have
stuff,
no idea.
Man.
I think it's the government after tonight.
It's Sam.
It's Sam. I think Sam's gone. So before you leave, why don't you hang in there, make sure I get him back.
This is just a really exciting time when we have this government program that's come out. You know, there was a behind-the-scenes evolution that happened here. When Lou Elizondo first came out, that he had worked for this government program investigating UFOs, his colleagues weren't happy about it. And we know this at least through George Knapp, who has been investigating all of this. Many of his colleagues weren't happy about it, and they weren't necessarily on board with you know, these revelations. However, that's changed, where his colleagues eventually have kind of accepted it. They were just, you know, like Harry Reid has said, the whole reason that this program was kept secret is the scrutiny. They didn't want people to say, hey, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, looking for UFOs or aliens and stuff like that. But that's changed. We have seen through Nick Pope's articles or through other people that we've interviewed close to this, that the Congress has had part of their subcommittees have been interviewing UFO witnesses and interviewing Lou and others related to, you know, what's been going on with this phenomena, let alone we've had a lot more media stories. And then on top of that, we have these scientists being more acceptive of the extraterrestrial hypotheses. And I think one thing we have to remember, and it is part of this evolution, is that the Search for Extraterrestrial Institute, kind of as it was represented in Contact, they were just going to listen for signals of aliens possibly being out there. And that used to be considered fringe. It was really strange and weird, like in the 80s or in the 90s. And as time went on, because that organization is so full of scientists, it began to be taken very, very seriously, until we've reached this point where NASA essentially is like a SETI institute. They're all about looking for aliens. Many of their projects have been looking for life. So that idea that they're out there has been adopted and become, you know, not weird or funny or worth
Sam,
giggling about.
Call me right
UFOs have had a harder time of it, but now we're starting to get to a point where even the idea that extraterrestrials could be visiting us or we could be having observing evidence of advanced civilizations is now starting to become more accepted. It could be not that only that we have more credible information coming forth. That's why I think it's important that people like, you know, Martin and Martin's guests share credible information. But it's also, I think that, you know, a lot of these grad students who work on these papers are younger people, and the statistics show that younger people are really into this topic. They are more into UFOs and more accepting of the possibility, or even have taken it as fact that there's got to be others out there. And so that could be part of why this is happening. But we're riding this crest of where public opinion about something that we've worked on is changing. And I think it's interesting, and you know, with people like Sam Maranta, who's been doing these sorts of investigations for decades, the landscape has changed so much. And personally, I think for the positive.
You know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of UFO incidents happening lately, besides, you know, you mentioned one, but I have noticed it seems quiet. Am I just not seeing them as much?
I agree with you. I totally agree. What it is interesting that we haven't had a lot of stories about UFO sightings recently. We've had stories about recent sightings. We've seen a lot of stories in the media about UFOs and UFO sightings, but typically they're talking about, well, for instance, a lot of them are talking about 2018 since it's January, or now it's February, but in, I think because it's January, a lot of people review the previous year. So we had a lot of 2018 sighting report stories, but not about necessarily individual sightings. When it comes to individual sightings, we've had a few, but nothing of note. And I know some people will argue that they disagree, but really, a lot of what we've seen has been the type of, you know, birds and bees and solar balloons and balloons, and nothing really strong or interesting, unfortunately. In fact, even this case in Utah, do you remember that one? Where this drone captured something zip by very quickly, and a lot of people have analyzed that, and I think proven pretty handedly, including, you know, our go-to guy, Mark D'Antonio, who's the MUFON video and photo expert, that it was a bird swooping in on the drone, which makes sense. Movements fit. They even got some stills that seem like that seems to be the answer for that one. So, yeah, no mysterious, really great sightings recently that I'm aware of. And that, you know, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. It's interesting that we have this kind of resurgence. And I was asked recently on Brian Eno, his show.
Paul Eno.
Yeah, Paul and Ben, their show. And you know, there haven't been recently some really great sightings, even though we have this kind of bigger interest in the topic. So I think that's odd.
Yeah. Alejandro, I don't know if there's another subject you can speak of, but I'm going to try to dial through to Sam. It's just okay. Going to take a few minutes. So let's see. Can you go ahead and talk about your Thursday night live stream show? I really enjoy that.
Okay. Well, I talked a lot about news. So my Thursday live stream show, of course, here, well, I guess we're probably not broadcasting on YouTube right now.
No, normally. We're on YouTube. Yeah.
Oh, we are. Okay. So it's here on YouTube, kind of like this show where I do a live show. It's every Thursday evening, 6 p.m. Arizona time. And I say Arizona time because we don't change with daylight savings. So right now we're aligned with Mountain. Otherwise, in the summer, we're aligned with Pacific. But essentially, I cover the news in more depth and some of the stories that I write. So kind of like these reviews I've been doing on Project Blue Book, I go into detail about some of the stories that are related to these episodes that I include in the links. And also the actual Blue Book files. What I think is interesting is I've read other reviews, and I haven't seen any other reviews except for mine, actually, where that reference the actual Blue Book stories and give you links to them to see the files themselves. Because it's hard to tell from the television show, certainly, what's real and what's not. And some of the more interesting points or aspects, especially of those sightings that were covered in the first few episodes, are really fascinating. And you can find pictures or details in the Project Blue Book files. Another really important, and I think this is the number one most important book in ufology, is Captain Ruppelt's book. So Edward Ruppelt essentially, and I think this is an interesting part of history, and he documents this in his book. The Air Force in the early 50s was not, when it came to UFOs, was not seen in a positive light. That's because in 1948, the very first UFO investigation that went on, Project Sign, there was a paper written, estimate of a situation, that concluded UFOs could be extraterrestrial in nature. Of course, they outlined a few things these could be, but they said some are genuine mysteries and this could be a possibility. General Vandenberg didn't like that idea. He said, try again, ripped up the paper report, and essentially wanted to take that part out because he didn't feel there was enough evidence to support that. So then became Project Grudge. What's interesting is that project names are supposed to be chosen randomly, and supposedly they are, but Grudge seemed to fit because by this time, the Air Force really seemed to have a grudge against the whole phenomena, and they really worked hard to debunk everything, older cases, current cases. And so even scientists began to not want to deal with the Air Force, or even people in the Air Force didn't want to send cases to Blue Book because they knew, even if they had an interesting case, that Blue Book would say, oh, it's not this or it's not that. In fact, Project Blue Book covered one of the cases, and I think it was the Gorman case in the first episode. I can't remember for sure. But essentially what had happened was that the object was caught on radar. And the radar guy sent in to Blue Book, hey, this is not weather phenomena. It was not some sort of weather messing with our radar. This was an object that we saw moving in a strange manner. They send this into Blue Book, being very clear. And Ruppelt says he saw this report and it was obvious that they were afraid that Blue Book would explain it away. And sure enough, they still explained it away and said, oh, nope, this has to be weather. Even though those radar people explicitly said they checked that that was not the issue. But it demonstrated why this angst and frustration was having with Blue Book. So they wanted Ruppelt to come take a look and say, well, what should we do at this point? And Ruppelt said, we've got a bad reputation. This is not good for us. We really need to genuinely investigate these things. And they said, okay, thanks. Go for it. And they put him in charge. He only did this for about a year or so. And then he retired and he wrote a book about his experience in Project Blue Book. And it's a great book. It's got some very, very credible cases. And I really feel it's the most important book in this field. And you can find that book for free on the NICAP website. But just Google Ruppelt estimate of a situation, and you can find it and read that book. Several super fascinating cases in there. And that book is really what's being used largely by the Project Blue Book creators and writers to put together these episodes. So really, that book, you're going to read the truth of all of the background of all of this. So that's something really interesting to look into. And so a lot of my stories, the roots are from there.
You know, my you and I had a conversation once about that book, and I mentioned that that I said that I didn't have that book. Well, someone went into a library. One of my listeners went into a library, actually in Phoenix, and they found the book and sent it to me. A wonderful original hard copy. Yeah.
But did they check it out of the library and then send it to you?
No, I meant, I'm sorry, a bookstore. They found it in a bookstore. Oh, okay. Did I say library? Oh, boy. Library.
Yeah, there are several outlets
reprinting
it, so you can't find it on Amazon. And, in fact, in all of my videos, I put a link to it on the bottom because I have some of my favorite books linked there so you can go buy them. But and I'd recommend them all. But that one's really important, I think, because it establishes from the get-go, and this is something I've been saying and is certainly borne out in recent revelations, especially related to, you know, Elizondo and his group that at the DOD investigating UFOs, that it's never been that there's been a consensus. I mean, I think the U.S. Air Force PR department has worked very hard to say, oh, yeah, we looked at UFOs. There's nothing to it. And it's kind of a unanimous decision. But that's never been the case. There's always been arguing within the Air Force as to the nature of the phenomena. And I think we see that that especially with the revelations surrounding the Nimitz case, which you've covered in depth, in that these people, of course, since 2004 have felt that they really experienced something anomalous. And now that they're able to come out about it, they're talking about it. So that proves, you know, and demonstrates there has been these conversations within the Air Force, despite, you know, us not knowing that. And none of that really, very little of it, I should say, coming to light. I shouldn't say none, because there are researchers who have been able to interview military witnesses in the last few decades, even during really all of this really hard secrecy. I don't know if Sam has. That would be interesting. He's done so much work. I'm sure he has. But one example of that would be, you know, the Scientific Coalition for Ufology and their investigation of the Homeland Security video from 2009 over Puerto Rico, where these guys, you know, saw something mysterious, and they sought the group of these UFO researchers to investigate it.
Right. Alejandro, again, I really appreciate it. You really helped out a lot tonight. Thanks
very
much.
No problem. My pleasure.
All right. All right. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, everyone. Our guest is Sam Maranto. He has been on the show a number of times. He's always he actually helped me out with the show at one time, did a couple of UFO news segments, and it's always great talking to him. I consider him a good friend, and he's back. And just what we were speaking of earlier, just a minute ago, about the Nimitz case, just one more thing I wanted to add about that. On March 19th, I will have Kevin Day. He was the radar, the chief officer in the overlooking the radar that saw all those objects on the Nimitz case. And he and I had a conversation last night. He said he was going to try to get a couple more Tic Tac witnesses to join the show. Again, that's March 19th. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm going to say I'm hopeful that's going to happen. And we'll see if it indeed does. All right. So our guest via phone, we had all kinds of trouble and every which way possible, Skype, you name it. But I got him here on the phone. It's Sam Maranta. Welcome to the show.
Boy, have we gone through quite a few hurdles today, huh?
It was something else. I think we started half an hour before the show, too, and still trouble after trouble. But anyway, you're here.
Well, Alejandro covered. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God. Alejandro, and you covered tons of ground. And I was wishing he would actually stay on, but that'd be kind of impossible for us to all talk. But maybe, I don't know. This whole Blue Book phenomena is really getting people interested that were neither on the fence or even in the arena anyway whatsoever. They were watching other things, and all of a sudden they're watching this. So we've discussed this many times over, and you always took the position, and I applaud you for it, saying that there, no, something good will come out of it as far as getting people interested.
Yep. I do think so. You know, I mean, there's been a lot of critics, as you know, for Project Blue Book, the series, and that is almost to be expected. But anyway, you know, there is good coming out of it as well, like you say. For the listener that we have a lot of first time listeners, can you give them your background and what got you? I know you had a sighting when you were young. But can you give the new listener just a nutshell of who Sam Maranta is?
Well, I'm just a regular guy. I don't have any acronyms in back of my names. If they're there, they're typos. It's just experience, and you know, I've had personal experience with these things, and again, because of that, I have to probably be more objective when it comes to analyzing a case, and that may play out to sound at sometimes far more skeptical, but never cynical. And I think that plays out well across the board if we're to be taken seriously. So my first experience, I was a little guy up at my uncle's cottage, and being a little kid running all over the place, he had just put a new well in, and I had to find out how deep it was. So I'm dropping stuff down there, and he's yelling at me, and I'm like, oh, well, I got to go hide somewhere and do something else. Go in the backyard. And I'm standing there pitching some rocks across the water. They were by a lake, and this was just a little inlet. And all of a sudden, this bright object comes flying past my shoulder. I was very warm after that. I remember that. And it went up behind a tree, a willow tree, and disappeared. My aunt was calling me. She said for some time she couldn't find me, and it was dark out. When all this came together, it scared the heck out of me. Didn't know what was going on. So that was my first experience with something that was truly anomalous in the sky, and it could be called a UAP, UFO, or whatever. But as a kid, one day I woke up, again, all this, when I was young, I heard my father talking about something all excited in the kitchen. I walked into the kitchen, and there he is. He's telling a story about going by one of his students. He was a music teacher, and he actually made house calls. And he went to the house. The wife said, come on in, Sam. You got to go in the backyard. The boys are looking at something in the sky. So they get out there, and they were amateur astronomers. And they said, Sam, you know what? We've seen some UFOs. My dad goes, what are UFOs? And they end up giving him a magazine, a couple of books, and they gave me The Adventure of a Lifetime. So wow. That's how it started out for me.
Wow.
Now, my first involvement as far as doing investigative work was in the 80s. I was doing it by myself. And then there was a case in 1997, funny thing is, it was the same year, of course, as the May 13th sighting in Phoenix, which was 1997. March 13th. And there was a, this one was earlier that year. And it was in New Lenox, all the way north through Orland Park, that this object was seen. It was seen by a lot of people. But the one individual that really, really made the news was a pilot. And I heard about him when I was coming home from Crystal Lake. I turned on the radio, and he was talking about this sighting. It was all over the news. So I made it a point to see him. And then after that, I met up with a gentleman from MUFON. And so we all got involved in working on things. And after that, it was one thing after another, you know. So I don't know how many years. It's been a long time.
Right. And you actually were the go-to for a couple of cases people were really looking into. And we can talk about them in a little bit here. But one of them that you were really involved in, I remember for quite a while, was the Tinley Park mass sightings. I remember you telling me you love mass sightings because of all the witnesses.
Oh, yes, mass sightings.
Yeah.
Yes, mass sightings really, when you lay out the weight of a case, the more people you have, especially if it's a cut across the demographic of a community, and from various vantage points, it really adds value to a case because you could be looking at the same object at the same time, but from your vantage point, you're seeing something entirely different. And so when you get a well-rounded view of what's going on, you get a better idea. And that was a perfect example with the Tinley Park case. The Tinley Park case, you have the three lights in the sky, and that's all they're seeing is these three points of light. And three points of light could be anything. But these were so brilliant and so unusual. They hovered, they rotated counterclockwise, and actually at times even moved very quick, almost hyperleaping from one point to another, then going straight up. This was strange because they never broke the signature of being like an isosceles. All that it was just a matter of your perspective. And we knew that by looking at the footage, and here's a perfect scenario. We have thousands of witnesses, hundreds at the absolute very least, and then we have multiple sets of footage from different vantage points. I personally reviewed over 13 videos, and I know there's at least 25 out there, and I'm sure there's more than that. And when you analyze it, and not only I that analyzed it, but multiple people analyzed it, it was part of the second series of UFO hunters, so that was analyzed very well, and they played it back and forth, and the bottom line is they are a fix in time space. So if they're not on a object, there is something in there holding it in time place. Though we know people have seen an actual object where they were directly underneath it, very cloaked into the sky, and actually displaying when you got directly underneath, almost like the canopy of stars above. So it was whatever technology it is, it's pretty cool. And I would like to think it's ours. I don't know, because the darn thing was massive. It could have well have been, a quarter of a mile, even bigger than that. Who knows? It was big. So where do you house something like that? The other thing is that object has been seen in multiple locations, not just Tinley Park. And during that period of time, on the August 19th, we had in Minneapolis, St. Paul, a sighting of an object stationary in the sky for at least 9 hours or more. And it sat there at about 30,000 feet in the air. And it just sat there all day, and to the point that people coming in from Wisconsin were seeing it turn red at night. And then it disappeared. Now that wasn't a weather balloon. In fact, Peter Davenport received that report, and he was the one who received the Tinley Park reports, the O'Hare reports. Peter Davenport is the unsung hero in my eyes in ufology for many great cases, and I applaud the man.
Right.
But he had these these people calling in about Minneapolis, and rarely do you hear about it. Did you ever hear about the Minneapolis sighting on the 19th, the precursor? Yeah. And then that night in Arizona, there was a there were multiple sightings, and there are two sets of footage from one being north and one being south in the Phoenix area, of an object, a very large object, very unusual, sitting still in the sky in a 30-mile-an-hour wind. Further south, the wind wasn't as bad, but still it was pretty bad. And there's a triangular object sitting in the sky. There's video of that, the configuration of the illuminations moving in a uniform pattern, motion. So that was on the 19th. Our first sighting here was on the 21st of August, but there were sightings all around the world within that period of time in August. August was a very strange month. It was also the month that we first got the first landfall of one of 13 hurricanes in the Caribbean. So that was a strange year. We never had that many hurricanes that were that powerful in that area. The other thing is, 2004, we end up with the Sumatran earthquake tsunami. That was on Christmas. So, I mean, a lot of weird things were happening in 2004. The other thing about the Tinley Park case, and this is something I keep on forgetting about telling you, is the Nimitz Tic Tac sighting was the 10th and the 14th. They were seeing them, though it was mentioned that the month prior, within that period of time, they were also getting incursions and other reports and other things picked up on radar. So it wasn't just then, but that was when it seemed to have peaked. And that would have been November the 10th or the 14th. And here, our last mass sighting in Tinley Park and in other places was October 31st, Halloween, 10 days afterwards, all this excitement around the Nimitz fleet.
Sam, you mentioned that there are some videos of the Tinley Park incident. Is that actually available? Someone can actually find those videos online, or where are they available anywhere to look?
Okay, you can, yes, look up. It would be UFO Hunters. It would be episode 201, and it's called Invasion Illinois. You could see them analyzing the footage. I'm sitting there talking about it, whatever. Then there's also the, I don't know if you could still find it anymore, MSNBC, Dateline. We did a, I got a call from them. They wanted to do something on UFOs, but they wanted the 10 best cases. And they really wanted it something with photographic evidence or video evidence. So I had mentioned X number of cases, and I pointed them to some individuals. And then, of course, I said Tinley Park, which they knew nothing about. Stevensville at that time, when that came out, they knew about Stevensville to some degree. Yet there was really no video for Stevensville. Where Tinley Park has video, multiple sets of video. So the thing is, that too could be out there somewhere, and it was called, I think it was 10 Best Encounters. It was MSNBC.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, I saw that.
Mm-hmm. And they did a real interesting job cutting it up. And you know, the funny thing was, it was shot by some folks that are doing some big things right now as far as some of the production, but it was done for MSNBC. And I sat there in the hot seat until I said the word extraterrestrial, because I usually don't say the E word. And I sat there and I thought I was going to melt until there all these questions. And when is he going to say the E word is what it comes down to. And I said this long sentence qualifying what I thought this could be, a long sentence. And in there was extraterrestrial. And when you hear it, that's all you hear is me saying something about extraterrestrial.
Do you mean you got on the cutting floor, they edited it out? Is that what you're saying? They edited out the rest of the sentence?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
And then the other thing is we always started out, I had one of the witnesses with me. In fact, one of the key witnesses, and has some great footage. And every time we would start a sentence, we'd always say the red lights. We'd qualify what it was, the color and everything. Never, never did they do that. They only showed the very burnt out images where you couldn't even see that there is anything red in there. And I remember one of the so-called skeptics making the statement that they even thought it was a constellation, which would have been in the summer triangle, Deneb, Altair, and Vega. And this cracks me up, because if it was, the Earth would have been spinning, because this thing's moving around, and we'd be dead. So thank God it wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
But no, they didn't even probably get to see the footage better or have at least some explanation to what they're seeing. These things were red, but so intense that what the camera picked up did no justification whatsoever to what they were actually seeing. None.
Wow. We have just about a minute or so, and we're going to be going into a break. I just wanted to bring up that speaking with both James Fox and Travis Walton, he did an episode of UFO Chasing UFOs that James Fox, it was a short-lived series, and they both, but mostly Travis Walton, was very upset at what they did with the cutting, the editing. He said the whole story completely changed with what they did with the editing, and he was really, really upset about it. And
James, he was very upset.
Yeah. And James, when he was going to come on my show the last time, he said, we really don't have to bring that up if you don't want to. In other words, we don't have to talk about chasing UFOs. So we're ready to go into break, Sam. So hang in there, everyone. We'll be right back right after these messages. Okay, we are clear for a few minutes. And Sam, we're still live on YouTube. And
good. So, yeah.
So
that's great.
We'll pick up where we were talking then, but let's talk about something different. Have you lived in other places in the country? You mostly have lived in the Chicago area, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I lived anywhere as I went, as long as I wasn't dead. Yeah, but I was born on the south side of Chicago, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't do much traveling anyways, as you know. That's why I get invited anywheres to speak to a Tupperware group in Poughkeepsie. I don't care. If they're paying the airfare, I go and I talk, and they don't even have to pay me. Just give me a sandwich or whatever. I do it.
And today we have 55 degrees here in Maine, up here on the coast, but we had cold weather. But you really got cold weather. How cold was it? You were in the negatives.
I wanted to say, I don't know if I ended up sending you I was taking pictures in the morning. It was -22, and that's without the wind chill. But then my sister called me up, and she was up in Galena, and I think it was -36 without the wind chill. And then buddy of mine up in Wisconsin, he said it was close to 40 without the wind chill. Wow. So I'm like, my gosh. Yeah, and we were down in Springfield. I told you we went that paranormal thing. It was very nice. But the hotel we get there, they had busted pipes. Yeah. And then the hotel next door had busted pipes. I'm like, my gosh. They go, it was horrific down here. They're not used to this, you know, further south. Oh. They're not used to it. And neither are we.
Yeah, the plumbers will be busy for a long time in the whole Midwest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, that was
I don't know, 55 degrees for you guys. That's wow.
Yeah, and speaking of warm weather, I'm going to be on the road the next couple of weeks. This is for the listeners, so I will be doing the show from hotel rooms for the next couple of weeks, and I won't have all my audio up to snuff, but it'll be pretty good. So, Sam, we got about we're closing in on like 30, 40 seconds here, and
good.
This is the only break that we're going to be taking. We got about a minute left.
Okay.
And so we actually met in person a couple of times this last summer when I was in Chicago, which I do go to Chicago quite a bit, but it was great when we were out in the warm weather out in Phoenix. And that was lovely to be out there in February a few years ago when you were there.
We had a blast. Wasn't it fun?
Great time. Great time. All right. Yeah. I think we are just about ready to go back here in a minute. Oh, we still got 40 seconds left. And so as far as the area out there, when you are working with MUFON, are you still taking cases to this day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as a general rule, a state director is not supposed to take any sort of cases, but I end up taking some. The other highly sensitive ones that, you know, you really got to watch what you're saying and doing, I handle those or work in conjunction with my assistant director. Usually it's usually the two of us. And we've had some great cases. I'll talk about one in particular when I get a chance and give you a little more detail about it. I think I mentioned it. And then we had two more interesting ones, cryptid type things.
We're going to have to roll right back into the show. Yep, we're ready.
Sure.
You can count down. All right,
everyone. He's okay.
Welcome back to the show. My guest is Sam Maranto, and we are talking UFOs out in the Chicago area. We took a jag, and we're talking about what happens on the editing floor when people talk about UFOs. I think that's pretty funny. They left the extraterrestrial word in there. And, yeah, and I understand it's one you want to avoid at all costs because, you know, it is what a lot of people assume, but you know, and I know, no one really, really knows. It's just a guess, one of the guesses. That's all.
Yeah. And that's fine because that's what science wants. We're not looking for proof in science. Proof is in law, alcohol, and math. What we're looking for is a decent set of hypotheses that could probably move up to a theory, and then, you know, that's great, you know, and then you can take it from there. And to do that, you need evidence. And most of what we get are anecdotal accounts. That's why mass sightings are so wonderful. It's not just one person's word. It's another person, hopefully independent, and from another perspective, seeing the same thing simultaneously, relatively close in time. And we could tie it all together and get some supportive evidence. Now, when you have a photograph, a video, or if you're blessed with something as wonderful as physical trace evidence, and this is something a lot of people don't understand, there are thousands of cases of physical trace evidence. We had a case in Southern Illinois that we did collect. Hopefully something turns out of it, you know, turns up good, but there were samples taken, and we may have physical trace evidence. So these things do take place. The notion that, you know, we need the ashtray that Neil's always looking for, you don't need an ashtray. Maybe if that's what he wants, but that's not scientific. What we need is evidence. And we need to evolve the anecdote by using a better way of assessing and a better metrics and less arbitrary and ambiguous evaluation and terminology so that people can understand, regardless who it is that's looking at the information. You take the data points, take all that, put it together, and guess what? You have something of value. But, you know, we're getting there, and it's slow, but it takes with that first step. Even if it's been 50 years, it doesn't matter, or 70 years. We're trying. And being the always referred to as, pseudo-scientific, it all starts at pseudo before it becomes legitimized.
And that's all science, actually. You know, everything begins with an idea. You know,
right.
most
it's
things.
Always hypocrisy. Mm. Yes. And then they're saying, oh, speculation. Speculation is the first step in science. You have to speculate. And you try to go outside your comfort zone. You test that, you know, oh, there's so many failures. Yes, you're going to have the failures. You learn from the failures. And so many of these things the so-called skeptics bring up, and they're not being skeptical or not being scientific. Some of them are very good, and the other thing is you should listen to them regardless, because there's always something, a nugget of something in there that you can learn from. I don't discount these people at all, as you know. But in the same token, you really want to give people a pat on the back that are at least trying to bring this information forward. It's never going to be perfect. Heck, we're just human. But we're trying. You know what I mean? We're trying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I promised to everyone that we would talk about the O'Hare case. I know you and I have spoken briefly in the past about it, but I still think it's an interesting case, and I don't think it's what you would call a closed case, because eventually people may start talking. We may get more information about that.
You're 100% correct.
Especially when people retire, correct, or they leave the airline business. But why don't you, for the person that's not familiar with that, I know it was 2006, same year I had my UFO sighting.
Yeah. That was November the 7th, 2006, after 4 o'clock, around 4:15, by gate C-17. It was right above gate C-17. And a couple of individuals were loading up a plane that was going to be pushed back and going out to, I believe it was going to North Carolina at that time. They seen something below the ceiling clouds, and it was sitting there. And nothing should be sitting there. It was odd. You know, here's this strange object just sitting there. It's Class B airspace. Nothing should be in there without a transponder. So, mind you, this is just X number of years, about 5 years after 9/11, people are very concerned about anything like that, any violation of infringement on airspace or something like that. So they called their manager because they wanted to file a safety report. And they were like, what is this? They wanted people to take a look at it. Pilot, co-pilot were also taking a peek at it. They saw it. The manager came down. Sure enough, comes out there, and there it was. Well, before you know it, it's being talked about on the radio throughout the airport, and personnel, regardless if they're taxiing, 747s or whatever, they're seeing it. And there was one, a group of people, two guys taxiing 777 at 777, and they saw it, and they listened to other people talking. And in fact, this guy, you could hear his, if you go to YouTube, you get a bunch of stuff on the O'Hare sighting. And the thing about the O'Hare case is why they had to keep it quiet. So many people, this is a mass sighting too, but they had to keep it quiet because February of that year, they had UAL just came out of bankruptcy that year. So they may not want to have been known as being the extraterrestrial airlines. That's a possibility.
Wow.
The other thing is, isn't that crazy? It was the largest bankruptcy at that time. You had mentioned that, well, now that people are starting to retire, they may be coming forward. Had that happened, I was giving a talk at some group up north, and a guy says, you know, I want to talk to you afterwards. I say, okay. So he goes, I used to work as a manager. He had a very good position, and he was working that day, but where he was working at would not allow him to see what was going on, but he heard all the chatter on the radio. And the end result is he goes and tells me that he was talking to his friend who was on the B concourse, and he was telling him what was going on, describing exactly what he's seeing, and without so much as a doubt, this was there. It was an object. It was below the ceiling of cloud, which was about 1,900 feet at that time, and it was at about 1,500 feet. It was somewhere between no less than 30 feet to as big as 88 feet is what they're figuring out as far as the NARCAP report. And that is a good read. If you want to get some information, know more about the case, go to NARCAP.org, look up the technical paper, number 10, and read through it. And you'll hear the data in there. You get this nonsense, people saying, oh, it's a lenticular cloud. And lenticular clouds only form on the leeward side of a
mountain range.
Of a mountain.
Right.
Yes, you've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're beautiful. And nothing like that whatsoever was going on. The other thing is the weather to support something like that. Wichita, Kansas would have been the closest place to have anything resembling the type of winds that you would have to have lenticular clouds. Because you can get them at times in the Midwest here. We get them, but they're very rare. It's usually at the leeward side of a mountain. So that was a bunch of malarkey. The other thing is the object shoots. While they're watching it for about 20 minutes, this thing just goes straight up in the air, real fast, in a blink, leaves a gaping blue hole all the way through the approximately 6,000 feet of cloud ceiling. Boom, instantly. Well, you can't do that instantly with a lenticular cloud. They don't do that. I never heard of anything like that. Then you have people saying, well, it's just ice crystals that formulate and drop down. And I've seen that at least twice. One time was on I-55. I'm driving along, and here you see this burst of obviously something coming out of the clouds, and you see this round blue hole. Well, first of all, you see this falling out. You'll see it looking like, looking like very feathery-looking. Fanned out crystals of ice, almost like snow, but heavier. And it'll punch a hole. And that's when you have a vortex of cold air spinning above, and it'll that area just gets the humidity up there becomes crystals, and it falls. It can't hold itself no longer, and it falls straight through. And that makes sense. But the bottom line, that wasn't what happened. We had the top of where the coldest area was that could formulate that was about 10,000 feet. These were at about the highest level of those, that ceiling was about 6,000 feet, maybe even less. So none of this took place, and they were saying, well, it's the lights reflecting up. No, it wasn't. I believe it was civilian. Twilight. So, I mean, no, it wasn't it. Some lights were on, but not everything. And they weren't reflecting up that heavily. So that's all nonsense.
Now, do I think I heard it described as it was almost like a blackened color. It was very dark. Am I getting that right? And perfectly circular?
The color, picture this. The ratio was 2.7:1 as far as the width to the length. They were using a ratio of 2.7:1. So it was, you know, like the tic-tac concept of a fat football,
mm-hmm.
something along that line, but it was more elliptical and round as far as in the center. So it was, and it was moving in a counterclockwise direction. My first witness that I spoke to was a military brat who grew up on the East Coast. Her father was a commander captain of a air wing for the Navy. She knew every proper term to describe things. So when she was analyzing it, with a really high degree of scrutiny. And the other thing was, she was also an ex-reporter. So she knew how to compile this information and explain it to us.
Now,
which is great.
Where did she actually view the object?
From two vantage points. Coming in on Mannheim Road towards the airport, she was able to discern it below the clouds. With her, as a passenger, was a friend of hers, was a doctor from Bulgaria. And they were in the process of meeting a friend who was a airline pilot from another airlines coming in at the International Concourse. So they're driving in, both of them see this, and they're like, what on earth is that? That's not supposed to be there. So when they pulled up to the international concourse, she got out and took her reading glasses, bent them at an angle so she could see it better, trying to get her view as best as possible. And she said while she was pulling up, other people were out there, and then they were starting to congregate, pointing at it, and people were taking photographs, definitely, and possibly even video, definitely. So she was there, and then she says when this thing shot through the sky, or through the clouds, excuse me, that you could have heard them, heard the noise. They like squealed, they gasped. They were alarmed at the motion that it was so instantaneous.
All right, everyone, that is it for the free part of the show. Thank you so much for listening. And if you'd like to support the show in here, hour two, it gets really interesting. When he talks about a recent sighting where witnesses, more than one, see a craft with actually what appeared to be windows and appeared to be some type of entities inside that were seen, again, by multiple witnesses. And by the way, if you can't help out and support the show and you want to listen to the full show, you can listen live. That's during the show on Tuesdays at 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's both on YouTube, and you can see that right on Podcast UFO as well and KGRA Radio. You can also listen over at the Dark Matter Digital Network on Thursday evenings to full shows. And anybody can go to the YouTube channel and actually watch and listen to a full show over there as well. So I want to thank everyone, as I said, for listening. And I also want to thank for Alejandro for picking things up when actually my computer crashed during this live show. And he helped out a lot. And everyone else that helps out with the show. And we'll be back next week with Chad Lewis, UFO investigator. Should be another interesting one. And remember, everyone, to keep your eyes to the sky.